Hi, this is the greatest story ever played. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
And today we're going to be talking about Vampire.
Yeah, so just jumping in. The description of this game is London, 1918. You are a newly turned vampire, Dr. Jonathan Reed. As a doctor, you must find a cure to save the city's flu-ravaged citizens. But as a vampire, you are cursed to feed on those you vowed to heal. Will you embrace the monster within, survive and fight against vampire hunters, undead skulls, and other supernatural creatures? Use your unholy powers to manipulate and delve into the lives of those around you. To decide who will be your next victim, struggle to live with your decisions. Your actions will save or doom London.
So, just a little background on the game. This is developed by Don't Nod, who we are very familiar with doing Life is Strange, Captain Spirit, Remember Me. Awesome to see them delve into a different kind of game.
Yep, more in-depth. Yeah. RPG-ish game.
Right. For the game, in all, London's basically divided into four main sections of the city. You've got Pembroke Hospital, Whitechapel, the Docks, and the West End. And with each of these areas, you have probably 15-ish, probably named characters at each one. And you can have different varying relationships with them. So at the hospital, it's, you know, staff at the hospital, doctors, nurses, sick people, that sort of deal. And each one has, you know, varying things like that. Each one also has a pillar in it who's kind of the central person to the community of that they live in. So for Pembroke Hospital, we've got Dr. Swanzia. Whitechapel is Dorothy Crane. The Docks at Sean Hampton, and the West End is Aloysius Dawson. But it's cool that there's so many characters.
Like, yeah, there's a lot.
So many people that you can go talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I don't think I found two people to even talk to. Like, two of them I don't think I ever found.
Yep.
Which is cool. Like, that's crazy that this game has that many characters you can interact with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of backstory, too. I think, I don't know if every single, like, character has, like, a backstory or, like, a side quest involved, but I think most probably do.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it seemed like there was a lot. Which is cool with the, you know, with what the description came in mind is, like, mm-hmm. are you going to eat people or not? Like, it's not just that you're killing, like, generic characters or just generic bad guys or something like that. Like, they give you enough about them that it probably makes you think on most of them.
Yeah, at least it should.
Yeah, which is cool. That's a good thing. So what we're going to do, since this is a pretty new game, is we're going to do kind of a shorter non-spoiler review section and then and have some non-spoilery feedback from some people too. And then we'll kind of announce when it's switching, and then we'll go kind of into our normal, more in-depth review and with spoiler film.
Tons of spoilers, yeah.
All of that. So, I guess, first thing I really liked about this game was I really liked the setting. Being, you know, right after World War I, the Spanish flu is going on, is, like, perfect for having a vampire show up and be kind of, you know, if people are dying mysteriously, it wouldn't be as weird as in, like, you know, today or something. So I thought that was a pretty cool idea.
Yeah, that was cool. And I guess along with this, one thing I liked too was there was a good mixture of, like, mythology, like vampire stuff, and a good mixture of, like, actual historical events like the Spanish flu or the country being, like, kind of fucked up by World War One. Right. So it was, like, a really good it was almost like, I forget how to describe it, but it's like historical fiction almost.
Yeah,
you know, it was I think they did that pretty well.
Yeah, it definitely felt like that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in general, I really liked playing as Jonathan Reed. I thought he was a cool character, just with the moral dilemma he is, in that, you know, you're a doctor, so you're supposed to save people,
mm-hmm.
but then you're also part monster,
and
to be alive, you need to do bad things like eat people. So it's that's a cool conflict of interest they provided, and and that he seems reasonably known too at that.
Like, yeah, he seemed pretty famous actually.
I guess that, like, probably being famous in 1918 is weird. Like,
yeah,
you know, they don't have movies or something probably, but, like,
yeah, they've just heard of him.
Yeah, but, like, he was still known, and he's, like, young, so that's even noteworthy too. Like, this young battle surgeon or whatever. Like, pretty cool.
He was also a blood doctor, which I thought was funny.
Yeah. Yeah,
so he's a vampire that's a blood doctor. It's like, of course.
Right.
But not in a bad way, but, you know, it's just like, all right, damn.
All right.
That'd be crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, we already kind of touched on this, but, like, just the expansive dialogue and the the depth you could go with most characters, I thought was pretty well done. Like, for sure, the game, it, depending on how you choose to play, like, you want to get closer to people or you don't. Doesn't really matter, I guess, in a certain playthrough. But, like, I feel like every person I talked to, I wanted to exhaust every dialogue option and wanted to hear what they had to say. So I think they did a really good job of making the characters, like, interesting and making you actually care about them. They did that really well, as I would expect Don't Nod to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. I definitely wanted to, I went back through a lot of the dialogue for a lot of the characters, and if they had any side quests to present somehow, I'd want to be on it, and like, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Which was cool. Something I did find, which I guess is kind of a two-parter, but I found the game was pretty hard when I first started playing. Just getting used to the style of combat for me was pretty tough. The first real boss fight that comes up, I died a ton. I just kept dying, and I had to like stop playing for a while and started actually another game because I was going to... I tried to do a good guy playthrough, and then I started a new game. I was like, all right, bad guy playthrough. Maybe if I have to kill, that's what will get me there. But then I kind of figured out how to play after a while. But it took me a while at first. It was hard. Then on the other side of that, once I got used to kind of how the game worked, I ended up liking it more and more. And by the time I was at the end, I really liked this game and thought it was great. And we'll get more into these things, but I think if some of the problems I had weren't there, this would probably be like... in contention for the best game I've played this year. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
Because the good parts in this game are really, really good. Yeah, very strong.
Yeah, and I think I'd agree. I remember we talked, I don't even, 3 weeks ago or something about... Because I'd put the game down, too, for, like, a week or something. Because I just was kind of... Some of the combat was, like, not necessarily difficult for me, but I wasn't really into it. But I agree, the longer I played, the more fluid it felt, and the more, like... I guess I picked up the nuances of how to not die all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, there'd be times I would just like dying all the time, and not even against bosses, but just random dudes like in the street or something.
Right.
Which was kind of annoying. But yeah, the more I picked it up, it felt really fluid, and I ended up liking it. It felt pretty tactical, because even some of the just random minions were like pretty kind of powerful. Like, some of them could like mess you up, which I kind of liked. It wasn't just, oh, these guys are, you know, just pushovers. Sometimes they were. But, like, generally, it was... You had to be kind of thoughtful with how you fought people. You couldn't just bash buttons over and over and over again. You had to, like, have a strategy and stick to it.
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't miss, either. Like, if you missed on, like, one of your combo-type hits...
yeah.
...or something, oh, man.
They'll make you pay for it.
They're going to make you pay for it. Then, yep. Yeah, then someone's going to... Yeah, and even figuring out which guys are better to kill first. A lot of times, I found the pre-win guard, who are like the bad guys, who are not named characters, but you fight them throughout the game
like
a lot.
Like vampire hunters.
Right. And usually they come in pairs or trios and stuff like that.
Yeah, sometimes like fours.
Yeah, and each of them have different kind of weapons. You're like, okay, who do I need to kill first to get through this group of people or whatever? So I did like that once I kind of figured out, okay, always kill this guy first. Or
yep, I did the same thing.
That kind of thing. That was something. Yeah, so I guess that's a little bit of thoughts there. I guess this is kind of diverting a little bit, but related to some of those issues, Don't Nod actually announced early last week, or at the end of last week, two new patches for the game. One is going to be like a story mode, so it's going to be less focused on combat, and that you can just play through the story. So I think that will be good for people who... were probably like me at the beginning, where I got stuck at boss fights and was like, do I want to play this game?
Yeah.
This will probably prevent more of that. I'm guessing that the fights will be easier.
Probably less guys in the streets, too.
Yeah. Maybe less guys in the streets. The bosses are at lower levels. Maybe you get powerful easier, something like that, so that your fights aren't so hard.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that sounds really cool. Once they do that, I might play again, actually.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
And then they also announced they're going to do a hard mode. Sounds crazy. Mm-hmm. So apparently this one is the opposite. More combat-focused, more challenging. I think that with this in mind, you're going to have to kill more citizens to be able to keep up with the game's difficulty.
Yeah, which sounds good to me.
Or something like that. So, yeah, that sounds cool, too. So there's a little bit of that. We wanted to, I guess, also... give some tips on how to play this game, because like we mentioned at the beginning, it's kind of hard. I guess also related, when you die, there's usually pretty long load screens. At least there was in mine.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was the biggest reason not to die.
Yeah, it was not as much that dying sucked, but that you'd have to wait for a while, so...
It was like 5 minutes sometimes. I mean, it felt like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it felt long. It was enough that I could browse Twitter for a while before coming back on.
Yeah, seriously, or like go make a sandwich or something.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's only halfway loaded, cool.
Right, I'll go do this. Yeah. Yeah. So that was something. I don't know if they'll fix the load things, but hopefully they do.
Yeah.
But some tips, though. One thing I found, I think I read on Game Pressure, I think, which has a lot of good walkthrough tips. So I used it a couple times when I got stuck, so that mm-hmm. would be helpful for you. But something I saw them write in there was they compared the combat to boxing in that it's like, you know, it's calculated, kind of a 1-2 hit, back up, get out of the way.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, which I found that really helpful because my typical fighting style is Leroy Jenkins, like
yeah.
just run in there and fuck shit up. And so I died all the time because this game is not forgiving in that style of fighting. But then once I kind of learned the way of fighting like that, that was super helpful for me. And I died significantly less often once I like learned how to think about fighting differently.
Yeah, that's... I agree. That's how I played. And one thing I... would kind of compare this combat to is if people have played The Witcher 3, or even The Witcher just 2, or I've never played the first one, but anyway, The Witcher series. It's not as good, but I think it feels similar, when I played The Witcher, I was like always rolling around and moving, and in this game, I applied the same kind of principle, and it worked great. Like, I was always, like, jumping around and, like, moving. I was never standing still, and that helped a lot, because I feel like whenever I stood still, I'd just get hit by arrows, or... some guy would come from behind and just plow me over. You know, it sucked. So, I was always kind of moving around and getting behind people and hitting them a few times, running back, doing some stuff like that. So, like, kind of like you're describing boxing, but sometimes I would try to get too many hits in, and I would just for sure get... my stamina would get depleted, and I was just wrecked.
Yeah, that was how I died a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was definitely something... I guess another tip would be you should upgrade one weapon, or well, I guess two weapons, a firearm of some sort, and then your main aggressive weapon, whether sword or the Negan bat or...
Yeah. There's like a cleaver. There's a fair amount of weapons. They're like
the scythe, some kind of
knife or sharp objects or blunt objects.
Yeah, so get one that you feel comfortable with and then upgrade it to level 5.
Mm-hmm.
And don't worry about your other weapons. I found that most of the weapons I never used.
Yeah, I only used one.
Yeah, I just used, for me, the Negan bat. It was like a barbed cudgel, so it's just this two-handed baseball bat that has, like, barbed wire on it or something.
You just mess people up with it.
Yeah, so I just whack people with it. And it was awesome, because its damage was pretty high. But I used that, and I upgraded that to 5, and then I bought a shotgun and upgraded that to level 5.
I did the same thing. It wrecked people.
Yeah.
It was really good.
It was super helpful. I guess related to weapons is if you're in a fight and you die, you don't get your bullets that you used back. That's also a worthwhile tip.
Yep.
Because that also happened to me at the beginning when I almost quit. Is I kept fighting and I died and I actually lost all my bullets. I used them all. So I was bulletless.
Yeah.
And I kept dying and I was like, I'm never going to get better.
Yep, just screwed.
It took quite a while to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
For me there.
That's fair. Yeah, so I guess another thing related to the upgrading weapons is the game gives you a lot of options as far as, like, vampire skills or, like, abilities you can have. But I think we read somewhere, in Game Pressure also.
Right.
But they recommended upgrading, like, a few things, which I tried, and I think you tried too, and it was way better than expanding, like, and trying to upgrade a little bit of everything. You just focus on, like, a few specific skills. Because then they get more powerful, and you just can wreck people, too.
Yeah, that was really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I did stamina and... what was the other one?
Health.
Health.
Endurance.
Those two were huge to do. I prioritized those a lot in the beginning, and those really saved me
a long
time. Like, even my vampire skills weren't very good because I could outrun people, and, like, that got me pretty far in the game. Once I, like, knew how to do combat, and then I had those pretty high, I could kind of run circles around people or be able to get out of danger quick, and that was huge.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
Yeah, and then also one... of, I guess, more of the superpowers, so to speak. Mm-hmm. There's one called Abyss. It's awesome. You yeah. should definitely get that. What it does is it lifts the bad guy up for, I don't know, maybe 8-10 seconds.
Yeah.
Something like that. And you can actually attack them while they're being lifted up, and then it, like, throws them on the ground and it hurts them.
Mm-hmm.
But once you use it, it takes 60 seconds to be able to use it again.
Yeah.
So...
it's great for boss fights.
It's really, really helpful for boss fights. And I didn't do the other two superpowers, though, so I don't know how good or not good those are.
Yeah, I didn't either.
But Abyss was super helpful and definitely saved me in some boss fights where I could have died, and Abyss got me through.
Yeah, because then it gives you time to, like, regenerate your stamina. Like, if you have some health potions, use those. Like, hit the bad guy a couple times. It's just, it's great.
Yeah. Super helpful. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those are our tips. We've got a little bit of listener feedback, just of non-spoiler stuff on the game, but just so you could hear some general thoughts from other people about the game besides us.
Yeah.
So, I guess first we've got Sylvans on Reddit, and they said, "My first playthrough, I only selectively ate people, tempted by that sweet, sweet XP." Each person you eat has varying XP as to how much it upgrades for you, so... yes,
yeah.
Definitely tempting. Made decisions that I later learned weren't what I intended, so when I played it again, I used the infinite XP exploit.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know about that.
I don't either.
I'm going to have to find that out. Yeah. So I could focus only on the social aspects, and honestly, I had a lot more fun without the grinding. For me, the combat wasn't really fun or great, but the story is definitely worth coming back for.
Yeah.
So story mode sounds perfect for them if they play again.
Oh, yeah. Next, we got Dog Balls on Reddit. Says, "I really enjoyed it. First playthrough, no kills. Second, everybody dies." PS4 version freezes and errors out at times, but it's worth the effort. I had some of the same issues on Xbox. It randomly freeze. I think when I died, like, a quarter of the way through the load screen, it would freeze. But it was, like, one out of every 20 times or something.
I had that sometimes if I went to a district too fast, too.
Like, oh, really?
I ran across.
Ah, I don't think I had that. Yeah.
Occasionally. Not, like, too bad, but it would freeze for a second.
Yeah.
Mango on Reddit says, "I wish I hadn't spent $50 on it. The trailer just looks so good. I'm hoping that a lot of these issues will be fixed in updates soon to come."
Yeah.
So,
that's fair.
Yeah, fair. And, yeah, hopefully whatever issues they felt they had... hopefully some of those do get patched up for them.
Yeah. Yep. Next is Manielle on Reddit. Says, "It was a good game, but I don't think I would replay it again. Not that I don't want to, but there's no teleport or fast travel to waypoint like Assassin's Creed. Function in wandering around London is not easy. I prefer don't nod, focus on Life is Strange. I played the game 3 times plus 1 time this year." Yeah, that's fair. I think... I would definitely agree, like, Life is Strange. Don't know, I got Life is Strange better. Like, I think it's a better game. But I think this game, as far as their first venture into, like, RPG longer games, I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to see... So I'm kind of torn between the fast travel and not fast travel. I liked running through the streets. It kind of made you, like, experience the world more. But fast travel would be nice, even just to, like... the main hubs of the different sections.
Yeah.
Would have been pretty nice.
If you could just go from, like, one hideout to the other.
Yeah, or that'd be great, too. But you have to be in a hideout to travel to another one. You couldn't just...
yeah.
Wherever you're on the street. That'd be pretty cool.
That could be maybe a way to make it better or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vin, on Reddit, "I didn't kill on my first playthrough. Made the game more challenging, but I enjoyed that. I dislike some of the dialogue and pacing of the game. Some of the dialogue seemed too melodramatic. Some of the game moved too quick for my taste. On the other hand, a lot of the dialogue was very good, and I really enjoyed interacting with other non-playable characters in the world, how my choices impacted both the world and my own narrative. But in my opinion, the best thing this game accomplished is the ability to invoke thought. It fleshed out the world combined with the juxtaposition of a vampire doctor that really had my head turning constantly, trying to reconcile all my actions with my moral compass, so to speak. Few games I've played have pushed me into as much deep thought as Vampire."
Yeah.
That's
pretty good. Yeah,
that's great. That feels like some of those Life is Strange qualities people like transferring in this game in a good way. It seems like they really experienced that.
Yep. Next, we got Goodfellas on Reddit. Says, "Two playthroughs, definitely worth the $60. Good game, decent story. I got my money's worth. Hope they follow up with a more in-depth sequel." So here we kind of have the opposite opinion as like Mango from earlier. But I would agree. I would for sure play a sequel if they made it. I think they would have a lot of... I think they have enough to go on to make a second one, potentially. And I think they could really iron out some of these complaints and issues that people have been pointing out to make like a really good game.
Yeah, that's what I would kind of wonder, being able to build on what they know and what's good. I'd be interested in seeing them do
Yeah, even if they made a whole different story, different characters, and like a similar idea, I'd probably pick it up.
Oh, yeah. I agree. And Riddick's on Reddit, so far going with a no-killing walkthrough. Great conversation and social system. Characters are memorable, but it's balls to the walls hard. To the point that I got the urge to kill off the priest for XP, but didn't, as I'm trying to be a good doc.
That's fair.
No, yeah, and I definitely feel that. As it was hard, I was like, okay, who can I kill then? Like, how can I do this? Because I definitely went in not wanting to do a killing playthrough, trying to be a good doctor. And that was challenged pretty hard in that, with the game being difficult at certain points.
Yeah.
Especially in the beginning when you're pretty weak.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very easy to kill. Very squishy.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's the listener feedback kind of on our non-spoiler section. Now what we're going to do, of course, is... full spoilers ahead.
Yeah,
we're gonna recap through the game, talk about other stuff like that. So if you haven't played and do not want to be spoiled, drop off here for sure.
Yep,
play the game. I think actually right now it's on sale on Steam and PlayStation, like 25% off. So
oh wow,
yeah. So go check it out if this sounds like something you'd like. If you want to be spoiled, then here we go.
Yep.
So the prologue starts off and Jonathan Reed wakes up, and it's the black and white kind of vampire style. You find out once the game gets going that you can switch between kind of a regular view, and then there's also a vampire view where everything's black and white except for blood, which is red. And when you see people who are living, you see obviously the red in their chest, and you know, ooh, I can eat them.
Yeah, it's like your vampiric senses or something. You can like sense the blood.
It's like
people.
Infrared for vampires.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's really helpful.
Yeah, it's cool. So you wake up in that state, and you're looking around, and it looks like you're just in a pile of dead bodies, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You're working your way out, and you see a woman, and she tries to talk to you, and then you bite her neck, and then it switches to regular view, not vampire view, and it's your sister, Mary.
Oops.
Wah wah.
Yep.
and you do that, you're sad, you killed your sister. It sucks. And then a bunch of vampire hunters show up, and you have to make an escape.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of you running through some of the streets of London. You end up making it to a home that you can kind of barricade. And you're going to stay there. And then you try to kill yourself.
Yep.
You shoot yourself in the chest. And then you wake up in the morning, and you're not dead, but all your blood is there.
Yeah, and you're pretty okay.
And you're pretty okay, and you're kind of okay. I'm different. You don't know you're a vampire quite, but you know that it's changed.
Yeah.
And vampire commences.
Yep. Great. So the game's kind of broken down into six different chapters. So we're going to go chapter by chapter. So for chapter one, like Dan said, you wake up, and then you're kind of... I think you're following clues as to who might have turned you into a vampire. Or, like, who caused you to be whatever you are. So then you end up at this bar called... Well, it's... I forget what the bar is actually named. But there's this guy named Tom. He's a great NPC character. He owns the bar, and you end up at his bar. And you're, like, asking questions. If there have been any new patrons at the bar, like people staying at the inn, which is attached to the bar. So you end up meeting Dr. Swanzia, who you talk to, and he's, like a vampire... He's like friend of vampires. He's not like against them.
Because he's in a group called like the Brotherhood or something.
Yes.
And they're
St. Paul's something.
Yeah, and apparently they're like vampire enthusiasts.
Yeah, they like study them.
Who study them and want to like help them, kind of.
Yeah, and maybe be them. I'm not sure about that, but
right.
Yeah. So then you kind of you talk to him, and then you get some clues, and then you track down this. Who you think is, like, this vampire or, like, this guy who's been killing off people and, like, feeding on them. And then you end up finding this guy named William Bishop in the sewers. And you end up fighting him. He's a skull, which is, like, a kind of low-grade vampire, kind of. So this was, like, the first... I guess first boss fight, technically. And you finally rescue this guy who's like a priest named Sean Hampton from him. And then Dr. Swansea shows up and then takes us, Dr. Jonathan Reed, and Sean Hampton to Pembroke Hospital. And then he offers us a job because we're like a famous doctor. And also he's into like us having a spot where we can sleep during the day, and he gives us like the night shift, you know, quote unquote, so we can like work at night and there's no suspicion about why we're not awake during the day and all this stuff.
Yeah, so he really hooks us up.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
He definitely makes our experience possible, I guess, and stuff like that. And I think he basically wants us to be able to help answer vampire questions as we can, but also he'll provide this cover for us, it seems like.
Yeah, it's like a mutual beneficial relationship.
Right. So then in chapter two, we end up going to the morgue on an investigation, I think to find out how someone died.
Yeah.
And we end up fighting John Doe, which was another skull, and we kill him. All good. Then we go and talk to Dr. Swansea, and he asks us to find out who is blackmailing Lady Ashbury. So Lady Ashbury is a more well-off London high-up person, mm-hmm. but she has a good relationship with Dr. Swansea. She comes to the hospital and does stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
Helps with patients, but she's being a and so he says, hey, you go find out who's doing that and put a stop to it.
Mm-hmm.
We say, okay. We start looking around. We end up going into the sewers near the hospital, and we fight this sewer beast.
Which is like a werewolf, kind of.
Yeah, like a big werewolf.
Yeah, big, gigantic, kind of furry werewolf.
Yes. This is where I died a lot. This fight, I died like 20 times. Maybe more. It was awful until I figured out how to play. But I die there a bunch, but you end up beating sewer beast. That's great. And you find a note from Nurse Crane on the dead body that was near the sewer beast, and it's basically saying turn this in and Nurse Crane will give you free medical care.
Yep.
Essentially in Whitechapel. So we head to Whitechapel to find out what's going on there, and she's basically running like a back alley hospital in Whitechapel
for free. Yeah.
And Whitechapel is like the poor area of town, and where people can't get medical care, but also they're distrustful of things like the hospital and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So Dorothy Crane is taking it upon herself to help out.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up confronting her, and you're given the options to spare her and tell her, you know, if you resign, I'll look the other way, but I won't hurt you, basically.
Yeah.
You can charm her, or you can kill her at this spot. For me, I used charm, but it was an accident. I thought charm didn't mean like vampire charm, like erase your memory.
Yeah.
Which is, if you charm her, it erases her memory basically, and she becomes like a shell of a person.
Yep.
I did that. I didn't mean to.
I did that too. I meant to do that. So.
I took charmer as like, I'm a doctor, you're a nurse, we could figure a way to make this work out. Like, you know, yeah. If you give me medicine, then I won't tell on you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought, because I felt like she was doing a good thing, actually.
Yeah.
But I accidentally charmed her, so whoops. Sorry, Dorothy Crane.
Yep.
She seemed like I thought she was mostly good, actually.
Yeah, she probably was. I just didn't care.
Yeah. yeah, so charmed her by accident. If I could go back, I would definitely have spared her. But, oh well. After this, you go back to Pembroke to advise Lady Ashbury that the blackmail is going to end. But mm-hmm. when you talk to her, she is eating a patient.
Yep.
Who she claims had just died.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they did, but it was suspicious, and she runs away.
Yep.
And then I think you tell Dr. Swansea that you solved it, too.
Yep. Yep, and then chapter three starts. And you find out that Sean Hampton, who's the priest from that we rescued from the skull in chapter one, he's gone from the hospital, and Harriet, this old, bitter, cranky woman, has been killed by him. So then you go to the asylum where Sean Hampton has, like, this, basically an asylum set up for, like, poor people and people that are sick and stuff like that, and then you find out that he's actually a skull, so he got turned into a vampire, which is unfortunate. And he sends you into the sewers to find out, like, proof that he actually didn't kill Harriet. You're like, okay, fine.
He got turned into a skull fighting when William Bishop attacked
us? Yeah.
Is that right?
Okay. I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so you end up in the sewers, and you fight this guy named Fergal, who's a gigantic, like, powerful vampire. And you fight him, and you end up killing him. And then, in the sewers, you find, pretty soon after that boss fight, this skull village, almost, and you find this really, I don't know, older, nice skull named Bridget. And she kind of gives you information about the city and tells you that she's actually teaching these skulls not to actually eat people, but eat, like, dead people,
yeah,
corpses
dead
and stuff. So they're not actually not bad at all. And then she takes us to Harriet, who we assumed was killed by Sean, but is actually not dead.
And because she's a vampire also.
Yeah, now Harriet's, a like, this weird skull, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and then we end up going to the graveyard because it's Mary's funeral, right? Yeah. And she's actually ends up being a vampire. So you have to have a boss fight against your what you thought was your dead sister, who's actually now a powerful vampire because you turned her into one when you bit her.
Right. And at this point, as we've kind of gone on too, we found out that whatever turned us into a vampire was super powerful.
Yep.
That we're like we're an Ekon. That's mm-hmm. the kind of vampire we are. And those are like top tier vampires, whereas skulls are like
bottom tier.
Bottom tier. And so whenever we interact with them, it's kind of like a high cast, low cast situation. Like when you even interact with them, they're like, oh, Ekon. And
yeah,
it seems like other Ekons treat the skulls like shit.
Yep, always.
Yeah, is the vibe you kind of get. But so Mary is actually a really powerful vampire.
Yeah, she's a very hard boss fight.
Yeah, I think she was probably the hardest boss fight in the game, even.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of unfortunate that it happened this early.
Yeah.
That it was the hardest one.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it was nice because it was easier after this, but
mm-hmm.
she was tough.
Yep.
She's super powerful. She has this, like, thing where she, like, almost like it's, like, blood vines that come up and, like, explode on
and
you.
Hurt you a lot.
Hurt you. And,
They're also pretty fast.
Yeah. She's fast. She's got a guy tied up also. And if you get her to half health, then she drinks that guy's blood and then goes back to full health.
Mm-hmm.
So that sucks. I ended up drinking that guy's blood so that she couldn't.
Yeah, but I guess one note, too, here is if you want to have a perfect playthrough, you don't kill anyone, you can't kill this guy.
Yeah, don't do that.
So just if you're trying to go perfect, good playthrough, don't eat that guy and just have to kind of deal with Mary getting full health again.
Right, yeah.
But if you don't care about that, then yeah, fuck it, eat him.
Yeah.
I ate him immediately.
I tried to get a perfect playthrough, but I did eat him, and so I didn't get one because of that.
Get owned.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't have done that. Yeah. I did it because I was like, let's see if I can beat Mary, and then I happened to beat her that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, I guess I gotta roll with it.
Yeah.
So, I thought this was cool. I kind of, just as a side story thing, I kind of wish that you could have had an option where either Mary, like, could team up with you. I think mm-hmm. that would have been pretty cool. Like, if you would have been a duo after this.
Yeah.
Or if she would have been, like, the final boss.
That would have been kind of cool. Yeah, this part, I think, felt kind of rushed. Like, she was just alive, and then she was evil.
Right.
Which I didn't fully understand, because Jonathan, I mean, you could make him evil, but he never acted evil and, like, just went around, like, torturing people necessarily. But she just seemed, like, way crazier and way, more evil, which was really strange to me how that could have happened.
It seemed like she got really bitter that she became a vampire.
Yeah.
Like, in her dialogue with him. But because she said that she basically, like, followed him around all the time before this, seeing what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, like, it seemed like she felt like we, like, forgot about her. But it was like, well, we thought you were dead.
like, what the hell?
Yeah. So, it seemed weird, especially because she seemed, I mean, if she's looking around in corpse piles for her brother, she obviously cared about him before that. So it does seem like kind of a weird
jump.
Yeah, so I kind of wish that something could have been a little different with her, whether she was the final boss or
even just a later boss.
Yeah, like, or a later boss, or if she could have teamed up with you.
Mm-hmm.
I would have definitely liked that, because then you could add something where she teams up with you but dies in your conquest to fix this or something. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. There could have been other cool options. So
yeah,
this was still cool, but it would have been fun to see something.
I was not expecting it at all.
Right. After this, in Chapter 4, Lady Ashbury gets you a meeting with the Ascalon Club. So these are, it's kind of the high-up vampire society?
Yeah, like the elite society of vampires. Right. Supposedly, like, really powerful vampires and, like, probably rich vampires.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe we get. We get there.
Only guys, too. No women.
Yeah, only guys, no women. Lady Ashbury's not allowed.
Yeah.
We go to the Ascalon Club, and we meet Lord Redgrave, who is a descendant of...
William Marshall.
William Marshall.
Mm-hmm. Like this...
He was like a squire or something.
Like, yeah, like a really famous, really powerful vampire.
Right. So he's involved with him. Mm-hmm. And so he's, of course, the like leader of the Ascalon Club. But he commissions us to find out how the West End gets infected. So we go through and are looking around the West End for different things. We end up having a boss fight with Eliza Mullaney in one of the houses.
Mm-hmm.
Then we later fight the McPhersons, which are a couple that are vampires.
Yeah,
that fight was cool. kind of tough at first, because you're kind of doing a two-on-one, so it was all right.
Yeah, I like this chapter because there was, like, yeah, these random mini-bosses that were pretty difficult.
Yeah.
I enjoyed those.
Yeah, I died on the McPhersons a few times because trying to just make sure if you kill one, then you can beat them both, but you got to kind of
keep one not behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this because it kind of gave you background on them, too, like how they turned. And, like, what they did when they turned.
Right.
Like, what's her name? Eliza Mullaney, like, killed her whole family.
Yeah.
It was, like, crazy.
Right. Yeah. That was cool. Then you end up finally reaching the theater, because after going to the McPhersons and Eliza Mullaney, you realize that they're not the start of the West End virus, but it's later on. We end up reaching the theater, and we have a boss fight with Doris Fletcher, who was a famous actress in her day. I think it was actress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, and so you have this big boss fight with her. She is more powerful than other vampires we've fought so far in a lot of ways.
She was also really, like, mutated and weird.
Yeah, looking. She had, like, a big arm.
Yeah, it was, like, all pussy and like gigantic.
Tumory looking.
It's, like, really stretchy.
Yeah, so you end up in a big boss fight with her and take her out.
Yeah. So then Chapter 5 picks up, and Lord Redgrave, who's, like, the head of the Ascalon Club, he tells us to go turn... How do you say this guy's name?
Aloysius Dawson.
Aloysius Dawson into an Ekon. So Aloysius Dawson is the pillar of the West End, and he is super rich. He's, like, part of the Ascalon Club because he's rich and has a lot of, like, sway, and, you know, his opinion matters a lot.
Yeah.
So finally... Lord Redgrave gives the okay, like, we're going to turn this guy into a vampire, because that's what he wants.
Aloysius Dawson wants to basically, like, just build big walls to keep the plague out of the West End. That's his goal. It's like, who cares about the rest of London? We'll get through.
Yeah, basically he's trying to separate the rich people in the West End from everybody else. Right. So he's kind of evil. He's got a lot of money, but he's pretty evil.
Right.
So then on the way to this guy's house, Aloysius Dawson's house, we, like, go through the sewers, and, like, it's not just, like walk down the street. It's, like, a pretty big trek.
Yeah.
And we fight another guy who's just, like, Fergal. His name is Leon Augustine. Was he Fergal's brother, maybe? They like, knew of each other.
Yeah, I thought they might both be parts of the Ascalon Club.
Okay, that could be.
Because when we killed Fergal, Lord Redgrave was kind of like, yeah, I know you killed him, that's fine.
Yeah.
He was like, what? Like,
yeah, it didn't seem to care.
Yeah.
So we fight him, kill him, and we end up at Aloysius Dawson's mansion, and then we're given the option to, like, do we turn this guy into an Ekon, even though we know his plans, what he's going to do? Do we just kill him, or do we charm him and just make him kind of forget that he ever wanted to be a vampire and just kind of have a peaceful death, like, you're okay with dying, just die peacefully.
Right.
So I ended up doing the first thing, where I just charmed him and let him die in his sleep peacefully.
Okay.
That's what I did, which is actually, I think, the best option you can do.
Yeah.
Because then it gives all of his money to all the other districts. So what happens is everyone who's, like, sick or hurt ends up being healthy, and they lose all their status.
Oh, really?
Injuries. Yeah. It's great.
Oh, man.
So it, like, kind of makes all the districts, like, stable.
I didn't do mine right before that. Whatever options were needed to get there, I didn't get that. Mm. So I end up just killing him.
Which is better than turning him, for sure.
Yeah, because he was evil, I didn't think he should be a vampire. And actually, we didn't talk about these earlier. I guess I didn't put them in there. But there's other points where other characters can come up that you can turn them into vampires.
Mm-hmm.
You get that option with Sean, right?
Yeah.
You can make him a full Ekon at one point.
Yeah, because he's a Skull already.
But in the game, I never chose to make anyone vampires because I kind of took it as, like, Jonathan Reed would think vampires aren't really a good thing. I'm one, but, like, we shouldn't make more.
Yeah.
So I never turned anyone. And this guy being bad, like, someone who can live forever, it shouldn't be him.
Yeah, no, he's terrible.
This guy's a monster. Like, yep. He's not going to use being a vampire for good.
Nope.
So.
Yeah. And then you go back to the Pembroke Hospital to, like, talk with Dr. Swanzia. Actually, I think you get, like, a letter or, like, some notice that Pembroke Hospital is under attack by the Prewin guard.
Yeah, Old Bridget tells you, I think.
Old Bridget, yeah. So then we go back to Pembroke Hospital. You actually fight the boss or the head guy of the Prewin guard, which is, his name is Jeffrey McCollum. This is actually a pretty hard boss fight. He has, like, there's this attic, I guess, above the entire Pembroke Hospital. And there's, like, these UV lights in the ceiling that he'll, like, turn on while you're fighting him, which your vampires will, like, fucks you up.
Yeah.
So he was a hard boss battle, I thought. Yeah. I actually died a couple times when I played him.
Me too.
So then you have the option to kill him, to let him live, or to actually turn him into a vampire, which would be pretty fucked up to do that. So I ended up letting him live, too. I just let him go.
Yeah.
In that situation.
That's what I did.
Yeah. And then after this, you kind of get a hint of where Dr. Swanzia is at, because they took him hostage. And they're, like, I think trying to get information out of him about what he knows about the outbreak and the vampires and all this stuff.
Right.
So you end up going back to the theater.
Yeah.
Where Doris Fletcher was. And you find him, and he's actually been badly wounded. Like, his ribs are broken back in the, 1900s early on. Like, if your ribs are broken, you're bleeding internally, you're going to die.
Yeah, he's in trouble.
Yeah. So we find him. We talk to him. We find out he caused the outbreak because he gave Lady Ashbury's blood to Harriet without telling anyone, without even thinking about it, which caused Harriet to turn to a vampire. And then, like, it just kind of rippled from there. Well, because Harriet turned Doris Fletcher into a vampire.
Who's her daughter.
Yeah, Doris is her daughter. And then Doris turned a bunch of people into vampires because she was pissed that she looked gross, which is fair.
Well, and she was at the theater, right? So people would come to see her, and
she would turn them all into vampires. It was just crazy shit.
Big mess.
Yeah. So then you have the option to turn Dr. Swanzia into a vampire to save his life, to kill him, I think, or to just let him die. So basically, you have an option to let him die, / kill him, or turn him into a vampire, which I actually turned him into a vampire.
Okay. Here.
Yeah, I felt bad for him just dying. I was like, yeah, he's been pretty good to us, even though he's an idiot.
Yeah. I let him die.
That's fair. I might have done that in the second playthrough.
Yeah. I think just with my whole vampire, like, not wanting people to be vampires, and I was like, you really fucked up, dude. Like,
yeah.
Because I liked him. If I was going to turn someone into a vampire, it would have been him, but this fuck up was like, I was like, sorry,
yeah, you
dude.
Literally caused all of the stuff that I'm trying to stop.
Right.
Idiot.
Yeah. Bad move.
Yep.
Dr. Swanzia. Chapter 6, we go and talk to Lady Ashbury, and we tell her that Dr. Swanzia used her blood, that this caused the outbreak, and she runs away, really upset that she had a role in this, even though it wasn't her choice, but she's upset. After this, we have to gather supplies to go fight Disaster Harriet Jones, because we find out that basically...
it's kind of hard to explain.
I guess the blood that came from Lady Ashbury, because it was in a new person, basically, like, the vampire evil powerness stuff, basically is out.
Yeah.
I guess. It's kind of weird to explain, but that's essentially out. So it's super powerful, super reckless and crazy and violent and so forth.
Yeah.
And so we have to gather supplies to fight. So we get some insulin. We get insulin from the hospital. We get a drop of William Marshall's blood. We get that from Lord Redgrave.
Yeah, because he actually has some.
At the Ascalon Club. And then we get a drop of King Arthur's blood from McCollum, because he had some when he fought us, which supposedly the blood from each of these two people will make you more powerful. So we kind of got all of it together so that we can do this major battle. And we have this giant battle with Harriet Jones. But then after that, there's a subsequent part two to the boss battle where we fight the Red Queen's avatar, which she's basically the personification of the disaster.
Yeah, I think.
And is like a spirit, essentially.
Yeah, I think she's an old, like, mythological goddess or something, but she, maybe the goddess of war even, or like anger and malice or something.
Right.
So every once in a while, she'll like cause some big disaster to like wipe people out. And then if enough people have died or something, she's like appeased and goes back to sleep for X amount of years. And I think so that we find out here right before this too, that Jonathan Reed, the guy who turned him into a vampire, is like her progeny.
Right.
So she somehow turned, I don't even know, this other being into a vampire. Because the maker of Jonathan Reed wasn't actually a human. It was like this manifestation of blood. So, you know what I mean? It's hard to describe.
Yeah.
I would recommend at this point, like, playing or YouTubing it. Because
it's bizarre.
Really complicated. But he's like this ethereal, really powerful force. Like, the guy who turned us into a vampire. So that's why we're so special.
Right.
And Harriet Jones is like this goddess's, I don't know, vessel almost of destruction.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, sure. So after that, you beat Harriet Jones. Do you turn her back to normal? I can't remember.
I think we just killed her.
Yeah, kill her, for sure. Kill her. And then we beat the Red Queen, and then she goes back to sleep because she's, like, appeased or whatever.
Right.
And then this is actually the end of the official game, but then there's an epilogue. So you end up finding Lady Ashbury's castle because she's super rich, been a vampire for a long time. And it's kind of like a broken-down castle out in England somewhere. And you, like, have to find her. She's in the basement. And you find her in the basement, and she actually has William Marshall there, like, the famous really old vampire. And he actually turned her into a vampire a long time ago. Like, I forget when, like 1300s or something.
Yeah, I was going to say something like that.
Yeah, and she actually kills William Marshall because he's old and hasn't fed on any blood for probably hundreds of years. And he's actually the cause of, like, his blood is, like, tainted. It makes people crazy, like, really evil.
Because the disaster lived in him.
First.
And that's why it was in Lady Ashbury, because she got it from him.
Yeah, so she kills him to, like, kind of end it. And then, at this point, there's a few different endings you can have.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you have... So I was, like, a semi-bad playthrough. Like, I ate some people, like, maybe five or something. And at this point, Lady Ashbury will either, like, stay with you, kind of, or she'll kill herself to end the, I don't know, the disaster possibility going forward.
Right.
So my playthrough, she actually killed herself. You're like trying to tell her, I'll find a cure, I'm a doctor, whatever, and she's like, well, you've already broken my trust and betrayed me many times, you've been kind of evil, whatever, and she throws herself into the fire.
Right.
And that's where it ends.
Yeah, so that was your ending, yours was like the better bad ending.
Yeah,
I guess.
Like less bad ending, but bad.
And then I got the lesser good ending. So when I talk to Lady Ashbury, you convince her to stay, like, I'm a blood doctor, come on, we can stay in this castle, we'll stay all the time we need to be able to solve this, I want to be with you, basically.
Yeah.
And so you'll stay in the castle to find it. If you get the all good ending, you didn't kill anyone, didn't do anything wrong, did all the right stuff, then she'll stay with you to find a cure, but instead you, like, travel around the world trying to find a cure, so you're not just locked up in the castle, but you go elsewhere.
Yeah.
And then if you're just all bad, then Lady Ashbury's like, well, I've got to end this. I've got to do this. And you're like, okay. And she just jumps in the fire.
Yeah.
And you don't care. And then it shows that you rampaged a whole bunch after that.
Just killed people.
Yeah. So you were pretty bad.
Fair enough.
So that is the game for, I guess, general thoughts on the game. One thing that was an Easter egg I really liked was that Lady Ashbury owned a signed copy of Dracula by Bram Stoker in her library. I thought that was super cool.
Mm-hmm.
Really great that she knew him and, you know, whatever. I thought that was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I have two real quick, just very general thoughts. I would for sure play it again, and I think I'd play as just either super evil or just 100% good. So if they release more patches, they do that, I'll probably play it again. Sounds like the hard mode might be up my alley. I'd try it out. And then also with that, like, I liked the dark feel of the game because, one, you have the Spanish flu just killing people. Then you have vampires killing people. Then you have, like, this weird vampire rage, evil disease killing people, turning people into vampires.
Right.
I just loved how, like, man, there's just no hope.
Yeah.
Everyone's dead, and everyone's like, things suck. This is stupid.
Yeah. London is rough.
Yep.
In this game. Yeah, I'd definitely play the game 2 again, especially with this story mode, because I wonder if that'll make some of it faster. Because for me, I did, I think, almost all of the side quests. The only one I don't think I did was the Braille one, because I got 3 of the 4 things, but I couldn't figure out which one I didn't get. So
yeah, I was there too.
I couldn't
go
back and figure out which one it was.
Yeah.
Cause I didn't remember where I'd been. But I did all of that. So obviously that made the game really time consuming, because I did it full. Mostly.
Like every part of the game was completed.
Yeah, I did a lot of it. So I think it would be nice to do a story mode and then either go full good or full evil and try that out. I think that would be fun. So
yeah.
Once they do that, I'll probably play it again. This is related to the game, but I don't know. It was just kind of fun, so I wanted to share it. So I read 4 books that are kind of related to this game in the kind of the months around it, slash maybe before, slash till now, kind of thing. Anyway. So I read, of course, Dracula by Bram Stoker. So this is cool. This was published in 1897, and it's set in Europe. And really, I think this is the first vampire story created before.
I think so, too.
And so it's cool because, like, you know, World War II, 1918 or whatever. But really, you know, within 20 years, this vampire book came out. So the setting's pretty similar. How people acted, how it all was, really went together. So that was pretty cool. I read a book called Fever Dream by George R.R. Martin, the guy who made Game of Thrones. And... this is basically like Dracula meets Tom Sawyer. So it's Dracula, there's vampires, that's cool. But then it's steamboats on the Mississippi River in America in the 1920s or something.
Yeah.
Like that. And so that's really cool. It's, you know, it was a fun take on vampires in a different way and not just being, you know, castles in Europe or something. So that was pretty fun. I read another book called More Deadly Than War by Kenneth Davis. What this is it was about the Spanish flu right after World War One, and so, you know, what everyone knows about is World War One, but really, the Spanish flu was far deadlier. He said that 20 to 50 million people died from the Spanish flu.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and the Spanish flu just lasted from 1918 to 1919, so it was just within a year.
That's crazy.
It just ravaged. Like, more people died from the Spanish flu than all of World War One. Like, it was wrecking everything. Super heavy death count. And then, also... something in the book he said was that it's called the Spanish flu because the countries in World War One who were involved in the fighting wouldn't publish about the Spanish flu. So just like the reporter in Whitechapel, he wouldn't publish about the infection or anything like that because he wasn't allowed to, basically, or he shouldn't because people don't need to read that. The war is going on or, you know, whatever. So I thought that was really cool. It's a historical thing that the game got right. And that is that having the newspapers not publish it.
But that was pretty cool.
Yeah, the same thing, though, happened in real life. No one would publish about it. And so Spain wasn't involved in World War One, and so they would publish about the flu. But, you know, meanwhile, German and French and Americans, they're all dying of the flu, too, but no one's talking about it. Because they want to only focus on the war.
Yeah.
But, it is crazy just reading about that. And then the last one was The Plague by Albert Camus. That's in the 1940s, written there. It's about a French city called Iran, and they get the plague. And you see a bunch of people die and see what people act like when they die. But in all of these things, you see that there's just piles. Like, they all talked about how there's just, like, piles of dead bodies, like, behind the morgue, or, like, just like in the game. Like, there are all these things that just authenticated things in the game even more. Like,
that's cool.
People die so fast that people wouldn't claim their bodies. They just throw them into pits or, like... like the pit on the other side of the river where the game started, where we were, like, that was like a thing people
did.
That
was a huge pit, yeah.
This huge pit, and they just threw bodies there because people would get sick and all that stuff. So, I mean, I thought that was helpful because, like, a vampire epidemic could be going on at London at this time and people actually wouldn't know.
Yep.
People are just dead everywhere. Everyone's getting sick and all that. So I thought those were really cool, but I just wanted to share those books with you guys. I thought they were cool, they were helpful, and helped kind of add to this story and affirm some of the real things in it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Never read any of those books. I guess I had 2 final, like, general thoughts on this. One, I guess, critique I have of this game is So I like only 8, maybe 5 people, maybe 6 people in the game. And I killed 3 people in, I forget, the docks, and the whole district collapsed. So that's like the worst thing that could happen, because everyone in the district dies. No more dialogue options, no more like side quests. The district gets overrun by like skulls and bad people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I guess one thing I would say is I would like it if you could kill people like that and the district doesn't just collapse. And maybe my district health was already low enough that it just pushed over the edge. But I remember it being like pretty close to stable.
Okay.
I think. But I could be wrong. Whatever.
Yeah.
So I think it should be a little bit harder for districts to collapse, because it would have been kind of cool to just have like 3 people alive still, and then they're like, where'd everyone go?
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. One just critique there. And then I guess, sorry. Yeah, sure.
What I did like related to the collapse, because I had one collapse briefly too. And like one guy ran away and then you found him again as a werewolf later, mm-hmm. or something like that. So I thought that was kind of cool that like,
yeah,
when they collapse, it's not just that they're, I mean, and I think that's how I had someone go missing, but I couldn't remember who it was. I never found them again in one of my districts. But like, I did think that's kind of cool, is that it could happen that way. But like how yours sounded. And
sorry. Yeah. Mine became hostile. Like people didn't just go missing. They were all dead.
Yeah. That I didn't get that bad. That sounds terrible.
I did. It was pretty bad. Yeah, I did like that. Like, if the district got, like, kind of bad, people would, like, start disappearing. That was kind of cool, because then you'd find them randomly. Mm-hmm. Either dead, alive, or just turned into some monster.
Right.
Which was cool. And then my final, I guess, thought on this, or critique, is I would have liked to see the endings be more different. Because there was technically only 2 actual endings. Either Lady Asprey is alive or is not.
Right.
And there's, like, different wrinkles within both of those. But I think it would have added more replay value if, like, there was, you know, I don't even know. 4 is fine, but if they each had bigger differences to them, like, I don't even know what they would be. But that would have, I think, added some replay value.
Yeah. I wonder if with that, if they would have had maybe, like, at the end, it kind of gives you, like, a picture and sort of an epilogue, like, you did this, or it implies mm-hmm. you did those things.
Yeah.
They would have gave you a cutscene.
Yeah, like, something real.
Yeah, either a cutscene, or if you had to play for like 5 minutes, post that. Like if you had to play as the crazy vampire,
mm-hmm.
and you just have to kill people,
be kinda cool.
Or if it just showed you like massacring someone for a little bit, like you just see, you know, like a dad and a kid walking or something, and you're like, you just see you kill them, and you're like, man, I got bad, or something like that. Like I don't know, they probably could have done something cool with that.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. I guess hopefully, however they do it, that they can work out a sequel with these endings.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they could.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet they'll figure it out.
Hopefully canon is just that she's alive. So I wish she would not have killed herself in my playthrough. That sucked.
Yeah. Yeah. Your one's a bummer one. I watched that one. I watched all of them on YouTube, and that one I was like, oh, Dr. Reed, sorry, dude.
Yeah, that's like the worst, because at least if you're totally bad, you're like, I don't care. But if you're just like trying to play kind of like, I didn't even kill that many people. I killed like 5 or 6 people. It's like, come on, don't kill yourself because of that, idiot.
Right.
Selfish idiot.
Yeah. Now we've got quite a bit of some listener feedback from people about the game. So, yeah, here we go. So, Angry Attorney says, I tried not killing anyone in the first playthrough, but I messed up on a certain choice in Chapter 2 that led to me killing someone. Only in Chapter 3, as I'm doing a Let's Play It, and I'm looking forward to more unforeseen consequences.
Mm. Awesome. We got Shock Rampage on Reddit. It says, I kind of got bored of all the conversations I had to keep having. I didn't get very far into it, and I keep meaning to go back, but life happens. I never got bored of the conversations, but I had that same experience. I was like, oh, I'll get back to it. And I did, and it was great. Yeah. So.
Alice on Reddit, I did the extremes. One playthrough is the good doctor, eat no one. One is a blood-crazed sociopath. To be honest, the second playthrough felt better, but I knew the NPCs better. There was no one I couldn't justify killing. That's definitely something that you see as the game went on. Because there were some people when I first met them that I was like, kill. Since I didn't kill anyone, I never actually did, but I would be like, oh, this is a guy I would kill.
Mm-hmm.
But then as the time went on, we realized, oh, I wouldn't kill that guy, but I'd kill the other one. Like, mm-hmm. Joe Peterson. He was like the mobster guy in Whitechapel, and he was like harassing vendor. And at first you're like, you're an asshole. Yeah, I should kill you. But then you find out that he like is in support of what Nurse Crane does. It's good that someone's helping the people here. Mm-hmm. Things like that. And you're like, oh, you're all right. And then the guy that he was bullying instead like slept with his wife, and mm-hmm. Joe didn't know about it and stuff like that. And it's like,
yep, like you should kill that guy instead.
And, yeah, and that guy was kind of like, oh, help me, I'm getting bullied. And it's like,
yeah,
you're kind of getting, I don't know, like you're kind of an asshole.
Yeah, you deserve it.
Yeah, so... I don't know. That was definitely funny as it went. As there were a lot of people that it flipped what you thought about them.
Mm-hmm. Next, we got Aloy on Reddit. Says, I never killed anyone during my playthrough. Well, except the hundreds of pre-win guards I've killed during the game. Yeah, I probably massacred like 500 pre-win guards.
Yeah, that's a funny one in this, is they don't count towards your kills.
Yeah, which they shouldn't, because they're trying to kill you. Really have a choice.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Stace on Reddit, I haven't killed anyone except some pillar character, but that was unintentional. Just didn't feel like killing anyone. My favorite thing is probably the world, the fighting and the dialogues. The story's great, but I didn't like the ending, but the game is still awesome.
Yeah. Next, we got Clazer on Reddit, says, and this is a longer comment, which is great, says, I enjoyed the game very much. If the combat wasn't so tedious and such a waste of time in the last third of the game, when you have to constantly run all over the map, it would have probably been my game of the year. Yes, even with very stiff competition from God of War, Detroit, and other good games released this year so far. As it stands, it's just a great game. Surprisingly well thought out as well. The writing was spot on, aside from the little rush romance that went from 0 to 100 a bit too fast. The voice acting was brilliant, and the characters were interesting, with the main protagonist being probably my favorite character in a game in some years. I played the good guy, no district collapsed, and I healed everyone. Only killed a handful of people that seemed really deserving of death, but even so, I got the second to worst ending, but I'm content. Overall, I'd give a 9 out of 10. I can only hope they'd sold enough to warrant a sequel. Yeah, so I have a couple of thoughts. I agree with the second to last point there. I only killed a handful of people too, and most of them were bad, and I got the second to worst ending as well. It's like there's not much margin for error there. If you kill like two people, you're screwed. You get the bad ending.
It seems like it.
Yeah, and then I kind of agree about the romance between the main character Jonathan Reed and Lady Ashbury. It did kind of go from like, we're like friends, maybe there's some interest there, to like, oh, I love you.
Yeah,
like, there wasn't much talk in between that time.
It jumped pretty fast.
Yeah,
it went from like, you're a vampire that's helping me, to like, I'm really into you.
Yeah.
Or whatever. That seemed a little fast. I was all right with it by the end, but
it
seemed kind of like a quick change.
For sure.
I agree. Nova Genesis, I guess I'll say, from this point on, all of them are longer, so just a heads up, they're all longer comments. But Nova Genesis on Reddit says, I'm not really great at action RPGs, and Vampire is a lot harder than some. So yes, especially when I got stuck. Killing spree. Stuck to bad people at first, but then I found unattached people were safer, and sadly, most of those weren't evil.
Yep.
Favorite, I like the story and the temptation side of the kill mechanic. I like how a doctor can mostly offset his kills in a district. I liked most of the story, level design, combat, etc. Here's a few things that I didn't like. First, the story has this one awkward piece. When it all fits together as a Victorian vampire game, the opening line becomes relevant. To limit spoilers, see last boss and the guy who talks in your head from the start. The little piece seems carved into the story with a knife. The whole game would have worked smoother without it, and with the more obvious choice of the last boss. Then, back to the feeding. I did say I like the temptation, but I hate the grind factor. Other than the unique item, usually useless, the only thing you get from killing is XP. Not a ton, but the game gives you so little XP for killing, it's the only way to level up without a truly silly grind. To put it in the context, you could embrace Father Whittaker by just... You could skip embracing Father Whittaker and just go around killing 1,000 enemies. Yes, 1,000. Or cure 200 illnesses. Yes, 200. The only thing you get is a piece of expensive junk you can sell or break into common resources. The game really needed to separate advantages of feeding from experience points, but they didn't. The effect was this awkward situation where you had to kill a bunch of enemies for medicine and get no real leveling up from it. And difficulty. I mentioned before I'm not good at action RPGs. I almost didn't buy Vampyre over difficulty, but what I didn't realize before buying is that the difficulty just doesn't grow, it spikes. There's this one boss you can end up dying 20 or 30 times, the only one really hard fight before it, and 3 or 4 times hard fights after. And if you use all your ammo, healing items, the game makes you run halfway across the game to get more. Even more fun, you have to grind enemies and resting slowly to get bullets because the gun dealer can only sell 2 or 3 at a time. I think that I like the point he makes about the grind. I think that that was something. By playing a mostly good playthrough, like I said, I did all the side quests. I had to do everything to level up enough to be like a competent vampire.
It's fair.
Or whatever. And so that is something. I think that this game would have done better to have started with story mode in the beginning, probably.
Yeah, I think
I'd agree. To avoid some of these criticisms.
Yeah, that's fair, for sure. Next, we got Mockingjay on Reddit. Says, I love the writing. I did choose to kill, though not too much, but I felt that ignoring the system would be missing out on the emotional weight that attracted me to the game in the first place. Not killing was kind of watering down the game theme of a doctor trying to make hard choices, when it was clear that there was a good choice. But I feel like anyone trying the game for the first time should embrace NPCs to get the intended message and feel some consequences in order to give the world a lived-in feeling. I'd even go so far as to say that the game should force players to feed on the first playthrough at least once. That way, when you go back to get the best ending, they have a stronger sense of context while being able to experience the best parts the writing has to offer, the consequences of Reed's actions. I killed 3 people, well, 4. I killed Loretta Swanborough when I found out she was selling a lie. Then I killed Mason when he turned into a skull as a result. Afterwards, I ate Booth Digby. I asked him if he felt remorse for killing Jack Gillingham, and he said, what's one more dead body on the streets? My thoughts exactly. Finally, I embraced Tobias because he was worth a lot of XP, and he was setting people on fire. Yeah, he was pretty bad.
He was the guy who's...
He was this priest that was, like, talking about fire cleansing people.
Okay.
He was killing people.
Okay.
Yeah. My favorite things included the writing. Actually, mostly the writing. Combat was okay, but becomes kind of a slog. Personally, I think they should have put in a fast travel system. It would force players to miss out on a ton of XP from murdering goons. It might have drawn them to indulge in feeding on citizens. As it stands, even if you don't drink any blood, you aren't really that under-leveled for the challenges you face. Plus, having to travel through London on foot was a real pace killer at times. Although I would say it was definitely a hidden gem that most people should try, it was just straight-up cool at times. Yeah, I'd agree about a lot of that stuff. I think I would have liked to see at least some fast travel, like, between certain areas. And I do agree the writing was really good. I loved the dialogue.
Mm-hmm. I like that thought about his thoughts, a different take on making you embrace people.
Yeah.
Because mine was like, okay, I want to try really hard to be good. But because of that, I was pretty convinced I wouldn't kill anyone most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess when I got to Aloysius Dawson, I changed my mind.
Like, yeah.
Officially.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah, but he was so bad that it pushed me there. I wonder if I should have killed other people along the way, like that guy who murdered people. And hid their bodies, like, under the
Yeah, I killed him.
Yeah. Like, that guy. He was a guy, when I met him, I was like, I should kill this guy.
Mm-hmm. For the greater good.
Yeah, for the greater good, exactly. Blue Fuzzy Hat on Reddit. I did a dry run my first playthrough. It was met with some challenges and fights and thinking. With a couple more runs of the game, it did become easier in the lessons from the first run and killing NPCs. I had my favorite kill, the serial killer one. I think that's the guy we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed playing the Doctor as a reluctant vampire who killed a random NPC once in a while. The evil run was overly fun, though. The game didn't make me think a lot, and I was okay with it. One of my favorite things I enjoyed was the amount of historical accuracy the game contained. From the effects of the war and the epidemic, it depicts the time period quite well, with some liberties taken, of course. Pretty sure the Doctor has developed a mental issue, but that's only a theory. My least favorite things about the game is the rushed romance in the later chapters and a random loading screens when running around. I felt there was better chemistry between the Doctor and the Hunter, but not in the love way. The game has flaws that can be forgiven, but to each their own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agree with some of that stuff, too. We've got Crunchy Kale on Reddit. It says, I played about 90 hours in the first week. I had it. Working on a third playthrough now, having done neutral first and then pacifist, now going on a pure monster run. I like the game a lot, probably too much, but at the same time, I'd be hesitant to recommend this as a game to anyone who isn't already independently interested in it. The game is janky. It's filled with glitches and frustrations, and despite the obvious example of myself, there doesn't seem to be a lot of replay value inherent to the game. And for a game about choices, there aren't many meaningful ones. But if you're a dork for attractive and unsexified melodramatic gothic genre vampires and asking too many questions simulator, then this is the game for you. As a side note, this is the first game in more than a decade where I didn't turn down the music to a whisper. It's not off entirely. It's a wonderful mix of industrial game or grime and empathetic cellos that actually adds to and blends into the feel of the scenes, rather than feeling just as a layer on top. Also, the game is the first media ever that made me interested enough in the characters and setting as to seek out and read fan fiction for it. And also, it reminded me to go donate blood. Fair enough.
Pampa Blood on Reddit said that I didn't kill anyone until the fight with Mary. It would be half the game. Afterwards, I stopped giving a flying fuck about the story and killed everybody out of the hospital district. Game became fun after that. I just finished the game. It's awful. The pacifist run is boring, and you're making yourself miserable if you don't kill civilians. And then the game opens up, but the devs treat you like you're a savage for being a true vampire. I wish the devs went full Legacy of Cain, Blood Omen. There is even a power that reminds me of Cain drinking blood by telekinesis. Also, if you're going to do a shitty combat system, can you try to do something like Kaduka? I don't know. Wasted opportunity because the game looks awesome and the music is beautiful, but the character designs are good too.
Next up, we got Kapix says, really enjoying it. No kills, but made a save to do all the kills after 3 to 4 of the worst of the worst, but only the ones that gave a high amount of XP. I enjoy the atmosphere, and until you really get a fair way into it, it feels like your choices have consequences. Least favorite is that the consequences aren't clear enough. So, the big thing the game wants us to do is live with our choices, and they do this really well, except that with our major choices, they trick us with word options. I'm told this isn't the case for the French version. Example is the first major decision you make with a pillar character. You have 3 choices, 1 spare, 2 charm, 3 mesmerize and feed. Now my problem, I chose 2, as many did, accidentally. Instead of trying to charm the pillar, he completely mind rapes them. It turns out spare does exactly what I was attempting to do. My problem isn't the consequence of choosing an action and it turning out wrong. My problem is the game tricks the player about what the main character is about to try to do. If option 2 had said mind control, forced to forget, and it failed because we know force someone to do something they will struggle hard against doing can break them, I would have been fine with that. That's my biggest gripe, and it has major effects on enjoyment of the game after that. Many restarted the game after this happened. Living the consequences is great. Having the character you control not do what you expected is not. And I agree with that. That was actually where I know what he's talking about is Nurse Crane.
Right.
I thought that making her forget and charming her just to like, hey, stop doing this, please. Like, that would just be it. But it, like, did mind rape her.
Right.
And I kind of wanted to, if there was an option, like, load before that and be like, no, I don't want to do that. I actually want to, like, just tell her to either stop or resign. Like, the first option would have been better.
Right. Yeah. I agree. I like the idea that you have to stay with your consequence.
For sure.
I think that's good.
Yep.
But if it's unclear, that's really bad.
Yep.
I think this was not a significant decision, but I remember it reminds me of The Wolf Among Us. There was a part where you can glass someone, and we thought it was piercing them.
Yeah.
Instead, you hit them with a beer bottle
yep.
on their head.
It's like, how? That could mean both things,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I was like, we got in a fight. I didn't mean to. I wanted to, like, cheers the guy, and instead you hit him.
Yeah.
I've got 2 more comments here. We've got Fob Manix on Reddit said, overall, I enjoyed the game, but I think it could have been great classic game of the year candidate with a few changes. I did kill, assuming you mean to embrace, but not until the second half of the game. The first half, up until the boss battle at the cemetery, I didn't embrace anyone, found the game too difficult and unfun, so I decided to start feeding. I only killed the NPCs that gave me lots of XP, like at least 2,000, if not 3,000. My favorite things about the game were the overall lore, atmosphere and diversity of gameplay depending on what options you choose and leveled up. My least favorite was the lack of fast travel and having to run through the same areas over and over, and some clunky combat mechanics on PC, and a lack of reliable target swap.
That's fair.
Last, we got Working and Derping on Reddit. I enjoyed the first 5 hours a lot. Discovering the world and gameplay mechanics embracing was fun. At a certain point, the game became just a grind for me. I found the characters to be quite dull, especially Jonathan. The non-playable characters I expect to be interesting, but very few of them were. I found myself skipping a lot of the dialogue so I could just get the hints, which I normally never do. In other games like Life is Strange, Mass Effect, The Witcher, I couldn't get enough of side plots. The whole story felt a little bit like left to be desired as well. It's been beaten and ad nauseum. Here, pacing with Elizabeth as a whole was off. I just expect more considering Don't Nod's history and the fact that gameplay clearly isn't the focal point of Vampyre. The setting of 1918 London is certainly interesting, but if you didn't tell me it was London, I would have no idea. You're running around in dark streets and alleyways the entire game. It gets old. I understand there are limits to the fact that Jonathan is allergic to the sun, but some sort of change of pace before the end would have been nice. This might be a harsh read, but I did enjoy playing it overall. I'd give it a 3 out of 5. It just seemed like they either ran out of time or money making it, because it could have been much better. So, it seems like kind of, I guess all in all, it seems like people like the game. A lot of people seem to like the game, like the story, like things like that. It seems like the big criticisms are like it was a grind, it was hard.
Mm-hmm. Or like clunky mechanics sometimes.
Right.
I see that.
Yeah, I guess I really hope that they do sell enough to make a Vampyre 2.
Yeah, me too.
I would really want to see what they can do with... I would assume they'd have a bigger budget if they get to make a sequel and like they know about these criticisms. Or even what people say once these new modes are out. Maybe people's views on this game, like people who really want a hard version, maybe they'll like it more. People who really want a story mode will like the game more. So
yeah,
I'd be interested to see what people say with that. And hopefully this game goes on sale for like Black Friday and Christmas and things like that, and can, you know, pump out some more units. But
yeah, because I think they had sold, what, 500,000? Yeah, 500,000
yeah, I think so.
Copies, which is what they needed to do to have it be, like, a success, basically, right?
Yeah.
And then if they sell a million, it's like, oh, yeah, great.
Then they would, like, really think about a sequel, I think. So
yeah.
Hopefully they get there. That would be great.
Yeah.
Hopefully those couple patches do work, and, like, maybe some of the internet vibe about the game will get a little better, and hopefully get some big sales near the end of the year or something. That'd
yep.
be cool.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Next time we're going to do Firewatch.
Yeah.
We started playing that. We're going to, do that game.
Cool.
Excited about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, if you have other thoughts on this game or on Firewatch, please email us at thegreateststoryeverplayed@gmail.com. Go find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thegreateststoryeverplayed or on Twitter at storyeverpod. And we'll see you next time.
See you.